You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
What is up? Fantasy Sports Today, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am Greg Sussman. All by my lonesome. The studio is empty. Except for me. But thankfully, I don't come alone. I am joined by my good friend, the all-in kid, Jake Sealy. What's going on, Jakey?
What's up, Greg? You ready for three straight hours of us? It's Sussman and Sealy.
We're back baby! They tried to put us away years ago! We are back!
We are back.
I love it. I love it. But we are joined by a special guest as well, Jake. Is that correct?
Yeah, one of the best.
You can introduce him because I had nothing to do with this.
Oh, it's one half of In This League. It is the one, the only. Is it the Welsh? It is Mr. Chris Welsh.
Gentlemen, how are we doing? That was my favorite thing. Greg's like, and you can introduce us because I don't know Chris. So
Chris. Sure I don't think like Chris. I think I may have spoken to you like producing, but I never actually spoken to you for real. Hello, welcome to another show.
I'm very excited. I'm very good. I also, Greg, your energy is something special because I'm out here in Arizona and it's 6 a.m. joining with you guys, and I was and Jake and I were talking, and I was like, oh my god, it's early. And I'm awake. I'm good. Your energy has traveled over, and I'm good to go now.
I appreciate that, man. It means a lot. And I will tell you this: we have a lot of commercials here at the Fantasy Sports Network, but your commercials are always my favorite because I walk around saying, "I'm Greg Sussman, aka the Sussman," because of you.
I had somebody ask me one time. They're like, "Is it like the Edge?" And I'm like, "Nah, it's just like a mistake that my co-host decided to call me the." So now I have to go by that formal tag now.
I love it. We walk around all the time. I just repeating it. Chris Welsh, aka the Welsh. I'm just like, what? It was always so confusing to me. But like, I know you're gonna hang out with us for a little while, Jake. It's you and I for the next few hours. Maybe bring the analyst up here because it is FST OT coming up a little bit, and I want him to continue the mix. He's been here all week. And it only seems reasonable. So on the show today, we got a lot to get over. Because the first time in a long time, Jake, we had to talk baseball for 3 hours.
Yeah, because we actually have a third person who can, or like you and I can, and we don't have to worry about Corey being like, who?
Well, it's not that he can't. It's not that he chooses not to. Let's be fair. But like, I want to be serious. Like, drafts... The last drafts are this weekend. I know you're basically done outside of the beat Jake Sealy League. Like you're basically done, and I get that. But I'm not. Like, I am in the thick of things. I have a draft tomorrow. I have a draft Sunday. I have a draft Tuesday. So I'm, like, very much in the thick of things. And, Chris, I'm going to be honest with you. I need all the help I can get.
Well, we got it. I feel like I have done a draft in every single format. Scott Bogman and I, we just did one last night. We did a 20-man roto. 20 roto.
Okay,
let's do this.
So don't care so much about that. But if I can just tell you my if I can just tell you my keepers and take them out of it, we can just do my draft. Like that would be the ideal show for me. So perfect.
Well, let's make it happen.
All right, awesome. When we come back, we're going to help you prepare for your drafts. We're going to help me prepare for my drafts. And we're going to have a lot of fun over the next 3 hours. It's FST on FNTSY. Stick around.
Hello, friends. If you want to win at fantasy sports, wouldn't you listen to people who have already won at fantasy sports? I'm here to tell you about DailyRoto.com. Don't be intimidated by the DraftKings and FanDuel sharks, even the fantasy draft sharks. The guys at DailyRoto.com have not only won $1 million amongst one of the writers, but they've created three others. That's four people who have won millionaire contests from this content alone. Don't be fooled by screenshots talking about $25,000 winners from other places. Go to DailyRoto.com where they have a proven track record of creating millionaires. DailyRoto.com. Tom Greg Sussman say yeah.
Every 3 minutes, an American is diagnosed with blood cancer. Unfortunately, only 30% of patients are able to find a compatible bone marrow donor within their family. But that's how you can help. Go to dkms.org/fntsy today and sign up online and register as a donor. DKMS will send you a swab kit, which takes legitimately 1 minute to do. You swab each of your cheeks, send it back to them, and that's it. You're done. DKMS will then try and match you up with a person in need of a donation. The process is easy, and best of all, you can actually save someone's life. Not metaphorically, but quite literally. Check out dkms.org/fntsy to see how you can help. All right, let's get into some of the top stuff from yesterday. So people that are drafting this morning or whatnot, you may have missed it. Let's try to break it down for you. Jeff Samardzija is going to start the season, it looks like, on the DL. And he's a really interesting name to start with, Jake, because he was kind of a lightning rod this spring. Like last year, the only person that I knew that liked Jeff Samardzija, and maybe one of you guys did, but the only person I knew that liked Jeff Samardzija was my guy, Frank Stanfill. And Florio and I just laughed at Frank repeatedly about liking Jeff Samardzija. And this year, I know Frank's kind of got off on him. I'm off on him. Like, I don't want to do the shark thing. I know he's an innings eater. I know that the strikeout rate's really good, but it's just like the inconsistency kills me. Now that he's going to start the year in the DL, now I'm not even tempted to take him.
No, and so I was one of those people too, because I had him inside my top 30 pitchers, because if you look at last year, there was 10 pitchers with 200 innings and 200 strikeouts.
Yep.
He was one of them. And I understand it. I understand if you look at the seasons similar to the Giants of World Series contenders and not World Series contenders, it's year to year. He's up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And that's what's frustrating about Samardzija. Hell, in the regular season, he's almost up and down per start. But the fact is, if you're talking about rotisserie, and you're talking about the fact of, all right, just deal with the fact, like call him a 4 ERA. Maybe you get one of the years where he's down by 3.7. Maybe you get one of the years he's up by 4.3. But you're going to get 200 innings. You're going to get 200 strikeouts. You're going to get a solid-ish whip. And you just live with what you take. You don't try to play the matchups with him, because that's where you end up screwing yourself. So that's why I was in a Samardzija, barely inside my top 30. Now with this, if you're going to take out most, if not all, of April, you kind of just decrease all of his stats to maybe now 160, 160. You just move him down the draft board, because now 160 strikeouts, granted, it'll be nice over 160 innings, but now you have to put him down in the conversation with, I would say, more of the, I'd say even around Trevor Bowers of the world, because that's just what he's going to be at this point.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, that is where I would have him. And to be honest with you, maybe it's like I'm not sick of Trevor Bauer yet, like some other people are, but I'd rather Bauer over a Jeff Samardzija. Chris, is it fair to say that Jeff Samardzija is almost the Justin Upton of pitchers, in that, like, listen, it's never exciting how you get there. Month in, month out, it's a struggle. But all of a sudden, you look at the end of the year, 200 innings, 200 strikeouts for Jeff Samardzija, and 35 bombs and 100 RBIs for Justin Upton. The path there is just not fun.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a funny comparison that you do that too, just because I think of, like, you know, with Upton, I think of inconsistency on a half. So I know Upton's going to be good for like a half, and then he's going to struggle. Though last year was the first time he broke that. I mean, honestly, I was never a Samardzija guy. Before the injury, I had Samardzija at 39 overall in my starting pitcher ranks. Ironically, you guys talking about Bauer, who I just can't stand his face. His face is just something to be, I just can't do it. But I had Bauer one spot below him. I had Bauer at 40. So now at this point, I'm probably going to put Samardzija down in the 50. I'd probably rather have Taijuan Walker, Michael Wacha, some guys like that. But I just, like, last year was fine. I remember seeing him out in spring training out here in Arizona. And, you know, he looked good, but he was coming off of two not good seasons. He had 200 innings pitched in 2016 and 15, both in the 160 strikeout range. So to me, if anything, it was more of an aberration of what happened last year. It's like, wow, he was healthy. He struck out more guys than he had struck out in a long time, but his ERA was still a tiny bit inflated. So I was just never in, and I'm just now, like, definitely more not in.
So it's really interesting. And when we go on YouTube and Twitch and Periscope and whatnot, in about 10 minutes or so from now, you kind of almost alluded to one of my favorite, not ideas, but pieces of advice when it comes to a draft. Like, all right, so Welsh, like, you're not really just a Samardzija guy. You had him at 39. You dropped him to around 50. But, like, realistically, he's number 50 in your pitching rankings. And when you get there, and you will get there depending on your league, you'll see Jeff Samardzija's name. And you're not a Jeff Samardzija guy. The fact is, you see that and you're like, you know what? There is no way I'm taking this guy. Even though he's next in your rankings, you will either go past him or you'll go in a different position. And that's kind of one of the pieces of advice that we have for draft weekend, which we'll get more into in a moment. But there's just certain guys, no matter where they're ranked, you know you're not taking them.
And that's Trevor Bauer. That is Trevor Bauer to a T for me. I do not own him. His sourpuss face bothers me. I don't like his attitude. It has nothing to do with fantasy baseball. To be honest with you, he's actually, you know, he's kind of risen. If anything, the trajectory to me of pitchers, just a really ironic comparison that we're talking about here, is Bauer is trending in the right direction, where Samardzija, I think, was primed for a little bit more of a one-year wonder. No, but you're like 1,000% correct. I find myself all the time, I'm like, yeah, that guy, I have that rank here, but not yet. And then not yet. And then never happens. I've got a couple of those this year. I got a couple of zero shares, guys. And Justin Samardzija and Trevor Bauer both fall in line as zero shares.
Welsh, if you are judging people based on how their face looks, I feel like you're really going to like my theory of drafting players with cool names. Like, that was really one of the reasons I was super in on Taijuan Walker for years. Like, his name is Taijuan Walker. Like, that dude has to be good. He's not, and I've finally gotten over that. But, like, that was 1,000% a theory. Like, I drafted Trevor Bauer because I liked Jack Bauer. Like, that was 1,000,000% one of my theories, and it hasn't really done me well, but I feel like you can get in on it.
That's like the March Madness effect. Be like, well, I'm going to just do all the ones with cool mascots. I'll circle those guys, and my bracket will still – guaranteed, that bracket will be better than the bracket I put together this year. But, yeah, no, the all-cool name team, you could have, like, Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a person on the all-cool team you'd have to go with. I'm trying to think. Maybe a little Luis Severino. Hoskins, that's on the
– Oh, yeah, Reese Hoskins, 1,000%, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I didn't necessarily all fall so much into that. But
Jack Swearinger
totally
for you?
Yeah, I can do that.
Oh,
that'll work.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I like that one.
So yeah, those are the kind of ideas, Jake. But like I said, coming up in just literally 10 minutes from now, we are going to get into some of these draft weekend tips. Like, you know the rankings, you'll read them, but how do you win a draft? We'll kind of get into that, like I said, in just a little bit. Other pieces of note, Steven Souza's injury, much worse than it was originally let on here, Jake. Souza's going to miss a month, 2 months. God knows when he's coming back. What does this do to a crowded Arizona outfield? I kind of said it yesterday on the BFFs, but not to be like a total, you know, dick, for lack of a better term, but it kind of makes it very, very clear in the outfield. It's like it's much more reasonable now.
No, it actually doesn't, though, because the fact is, if they never added Jared Dyson, it would be, but yeah, now you get Jared Dyson or Yosmani Tomas. I mean, the biggest thing here is that I think Tomas is saying, thank God I'm not going to get cut and I still have a job. But that's really what it comes back to, is this guy was going to be off the team 3 weeks ago, despite being owned tens of millions of dollars. But he also got something in his head where, hey, maybe I need to perform, because he's looked pretty good so far this spring. The thing is, I think you're going to see Dyson in the lineup as much as possible to be their leadoff hitter. But now, is it going to be Tomas splitting time and with him, or is Tomas going to be splitting time with the other outfielders? Obviously, you want Pollock out there as much as can be. So I just don't know that it's necessarily going to be that clear. I think it might just be a Pollock, and then the rest is going to be like the Reds. It's going to be so the Reds are out there with one. They're probably going to be Schebler the most, but rotating Hamilton and Winker and Duvall the rest of the time. I think we could see a very similar situation to what the Diamondbacks end up doing, and then you're going to kind of be frustrated. If you have weekly rosters, I don't think this helps you.
Let me get in then here, Welsh, into the Diamondbacks outfielders, because it's been definitely a topic of conversation all spring, and you're obviously out there in Phoenix.
Yes, this is home field.
Right. So both with the outfielders and with the humidor, and that includes A.J. Pollock, David Peralta, Chris Owings, like, there's a lot of names in that outfield. Gerard Dyson, Yasmani Tomas, I mean, Jake named them all, and of course, Steven Souza. A lot of names, not that many spots, and now a humidor to consider. I've been all over the mat with the Diamondbacks. Like, I really liked A.J. Pollock to start off the spring. Now he's like one of these guys where, like, I get him, great. If I don't, great. Doesn't really matter. And that's kind of it. Like, I don't really want many other Diamondback outfielders. Like, even Diamondbacks in general. Yeah, of course, Paul Goldschmidt, he's great, but even he has fallen. What is the deal with your team?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, because there's a couple things. You alluded to an interesting outfield point here, that I do think there is going to be some form of a timeshare with Souza out, but we put the wrong player in. It's going to be Gerard Dyson, who I think is going to get predominantly, you know, the most in the outfield. But Chris Owings is going to be the other person. There was a period of time that we thought Chris Owings was actually going to be starting in the infield. And the Diamondbacks are doing something wild to me, is they are going to start Nick Ahmed at shortstop, who he's an incredible defender. He's one of the worst hitters I've ever seen in my life. I was at an AZL game, and if people know what AZL is, it's like rookie ball in Arizona with no people in the stands. And Nick Ahmed got struck out by Mackenzie Gore. So Chris Owings is going to get the time. They want him to play all around the field. That's going to be the guy. And when we come back, obviously, I can tell you a little bit more about the humidor because that is a whole thing.
If you know Nick Ahmed and you know that he was struck out by Mackenzie Gore, that probably tells you something if you know who Mackenzie Gore
is. Rookie ball. Mackenzie Gore is amazing, but this is rookie ball.
We're taking a break. How you win your draft. That's up next.
Do you love watching your fantasy players score a winning touchdown? Now imagine you actually got to call that touchdown play. The Fan Controlled Football League is putting play calling in the hands of fans with real professional football players running the action. Visit fcfl.io to learn more.
Welcome inside Studio 34. I am Greg Sussman, all by my lonesome. But I'm not alone. I'm joined by the all-in kid, Jay Seeley. What's up, Jakey?
What's up, Greggy?
All right. And Chris Welsh. I've always wanted to do this. A.K.A. The Welsh. What's up, Welsh?
Boom! Boom!
Love it.
That felt good.
That felt good. We're all feeling good now. So, this weekend is a major draft weekend. And yes, we talk about players. We're going to do so over the next few hours. For those that are just watching this small little clip, wherever they watch clips, Periscope, on Twitter, on Twitch, on YouTube, I want to tell them how to win a draft. And before we hit the break, we were talking about the humidor. So I want to go back to you, Welsh. There's all these Diamondback players. Paul Goldschmidt in particular, in the first round, he is falling. So when you're in a draft and you see these Diamondbacks players, what do you do about the humidor?
Well, man, I mean, I don't know if everyone's followed on it. Derek Carty had a really great tweet stream kind of talking about the implications of the humidor and what it did in Colorado. And there, a lot of projections have kind of set the, you know, a lot of this production could be as high as 30% down as far as power goes. Average is a little bit of a question. So I've seen all of this stuff, and you have to buy into some of it for sure. My problem more than anything is the Goldie drop. Like the rest of the guys, Pollock, Pollock has always kind of been like a Starling Marte type of player, speed, power. He could be affected. I'm a little bit worried. Guys like Ketel Marte, Chris Owings, those players, you know, for sure. Like those guys to the point where you might want to take them off of list or at least targets. Jake Lamb can't hit lefties, so he's never really been a target of mine anyways, and he was kind of held up by the power, so I'm a little bit worried. Goldie is the one that I have a problem where he's falling out of first rounds. I just, like I said, I just did a 20-man roto league, and he fell to me at 8. And in roto, Goldschmidt at 8 is a gift. The guy, there's only been 3 first basemen that stole 20 bases last year. And a little tip, the other two actually might not even play first base this year. Ian Desmond and Will Myers. Otherwise, it's Goldie. Goldie steals. There's power. He's a 5-tool player through and through. And I got a hard time believing a guy like this is going to have that massive of effect. So I'm hardly moving him. He's in the fives. He's a deal to me if he comes out of five, outside of 5. But I do think a lot of people disagree with that. And it is wild. But there's so much we don't know about the humidor right now outside of the implications of what happened in Colorado, but it's a different case study here. Don't move Goldie. The rest of the guys maybe be a little bit worried.
Jake, I brought this up to you yesterday, that a player that I know you really like is Charlie Blackman. And Charlie Blackman, I felt like, was that guy in the first round that seemingly nobody wanted. And Welsh just mentioned it, that Paul Goldschmidt, as he continues to drop, I believe he opened really this spring as the clear number 3 player. Then the humidor gets in there, and all right, Nolan Arenado jumps him, and Trey Turner potentially jumps him, and then we've had a discussion. Oh, is it Joey Votto or is it Paul Goldschmidt? And he continues to fall down. Are you with the Welsh that this is a gift that Paul Goldschmidt is falling?
I don't think it's necessarily a gift for the fact of it's also he's going to be still the number 3 player. I think it's a gift in the fact that what you said is the value of the position, the value of what Goldschmidt brings. I think that you do have to take into account the humidor. But the other part of it is people need to remember they might tinker with the humidor. It's not like they're going to just set it and forget it like Ronco. I mean, they could just be the fact that you get like a month in and like, oh, my God, we went too far with this. Let's tweak it back. Or they find like a happy medium somewhere along the line. So Goldschmidt could still easily hit mid 20 home runs. And then to his point, the biggest factor here is you get stolen bases from first base. It's just, it's hard to find anywhere. As he said, that's part of the reason Will Myers had such terrific value last year outside of having a very good season. So that's where I say it's a gift, is the fact that people were underrating Goldschmidt to begin with because of what he brings. And if he falls back even further, yes. But if you talk about, like, if you're going to go elsewhere and find stolen bases, you could definitely find other players. I still have Goldschmidt inside my top seven. I didn't move him back that far, but I originally had him at four.
So I think it's a really good point you bring up, Jay. Not that you always don't bring up great points, of course, but like, I think it's a really good point that you bring up in that this humidor, like, it's not like a set it and forget it thing. Not like, all right, your weekly lineup, you set it, you move on, or a player that you just set it and forget it. The fact is, if like this in April, if giving the balls so cold, is that what the humidor does? I don't know. If it's affecting the
humidity.
Balls, yeah, right, leaving the humidity down. So if it's bringing it down so much, and if Paul Goldschmidt's home runs are turning into deep fly balls, and the same goes for Jake Lamb, they're going to be a little upset. And Torey Lovullo is going to be a little bit upset. And Mike Hazen is going to be a little bit upset. And Paul Goldschmidt is going to be a lot more than a little upset. And you're absolutely right. Not that they're going to take it away, but they'll dial it back a little bit. And all of a sudden, you'll see an offensive explosion again out of Arizona. There's going to be a happy medium here. It's not going to be as extreme, I think, as people are making it out to be.
No, absolutely. I think you would, Chris, I would say you assume the same thing, right? That the fact that this is not going to be like, all right, let's set the humidor, and all of a sudden the entire ballpark only lets up 10 home runs in the entire season.
Yeah, you know, because also I think the Diamondbacks are going to get into a spot where, you know, like last year, think about where they were with, it was like, oh, they're going to do it mid-season. They were like, nah, we're not comfortable with it. Nah, right. We're not comfortable with it. And they just didn't do it. And then they finally decided to do it this year. I'm a little worried because Derek Hall had kind of come out, team president, and been like, ah, we're not really worried about it. It shouldn't have that big of an effect. So I think they're going to be monitoring it if they see that there is some type of drop, because again, you know, it's the sucking the humidity out, and Arizona's already kind of dry and it's taking the moisture out of the ball. So one of the big issues that guys like Derek Cardi and a lot of people had was that taking the same percent of moisture out of the ball they do in Colorado is going to have a greater effect in Arizona, or it's actually putting the moisture in, and because it's so dry here. But I've always speculated as well, What if there is an effect with Goldschmidt, but what if just homers are turning into a little bit more doubles? What if he goes from 36 homers to 30 homers, but you don't see a declining batting average and you see about the same RBIs and runs? I don't think that is completely unreasonable. Lots of players are successful when a humidor is around, and Goldschmidt is a transcendent type of player.
I completely and utterly agree with that fact, that he's a transcendent type of player. Jake, I know you don't like answering these kind of questions, but I have to put it out there.
I don't know what the question is yet.
Well, I know you, and I'm waiting for like the one word response where you're just angry that I even asked it. So
I'm already angry.
See, that's the point. So you're in your draft, and I kind of alluded to it before, and maybe I'm going to try to phrase it so you don't get annoyed at me. But like, you're trying to like win the draft, and they use your rankings over at rotoexperts.com, and they type in the promo code all in kid. They get their 10% off, and they get your rankings. And you have your rankings, and it's all by player. And you're going to have people tweeting at you saying, dude, you told me to take this player over this player. Why did you do that? And you have always said, listen, take my rankings as a guide, do whatever you want. But I asked Welsh before, I know you rank guys in your order, but there are certain guys you'll never take. And in my best draft advice, don't just take value. Don't just take the guys and be so loyal to the rankings. Take who you want on these teams. That's how you win a draft. Take who you want.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the fact is, I have that where I don't have people, but I don't have people on my teams because I don't like the value they're going at. To me, there's nobody out there that's undraftable, that you can't draft, because at some point everybody has a price, even if I don't like you. If I don't want Victor Martinez because he sticks now and he's only DH eligible, right. But if I'm playing in a 36-man like roster, I'm going to take Victor Martinez at some point if he's still on the board. That being said, is, you know, if you also like guys, I have no problem with jumping for those guys around earlier. You know, the biggest comparison is people complained about when I took Noah Syndergaard, where I did in labor. And my point was, you know what? I was picking eighth. There was no way on earth he was making it back around to me, and there wasn't, because DeGrom went, Baumgartner went. There was like four more pitchers that went. So, okay, maybe Syndergaard was a half round early, but it wasn't early for the fact that there was no chance I was getting him in back in the next round. So if you want your guy, you have to go take it. It's not like you go back to the draft and you took him over 10 other guys, and that's the biggest crux of your draft. It's just, if you want somebody, if you believe in somebody, that's fine. And the problem is where people start drafting somebody like five rounds earlier than you should just because you really want them.
And I think, Welsh, that point even goes farther in a keeper league. And I was joking before, and by joking, I mean not remotely joking, about my draft on Tuesday, where it has keepers and a lot of good players are already gone. Really, almost 50 of them, with every team keeping four keepers, and it's a 12-team draft. So top 50 of the top players are gone, off the market. So players that I'm seeing in Jake's rankings, for instance, that go in the eighth round, I'm going to have to take in the third. And especially in this kind of league, I'm not going to care. If I realize that Nick Castellanos is my guy, I might have to take him way earlier than I should, and I'm not going to feel bad about that because it's my guy. And I think everybody should do that in their draft. If that's who you really want, I know there's a lot of people like Mike Florio, my guy, loves Blake Snell. If he's going to pull up for Blake Snell, he's not going to feel bad about himself because he just took him early. He's going to feel good because he got his player.
Yeah, I mean, I will be honest. I am a bit of a value guy. Like,
oh, okay.
I definitely am going to look at values in a general sense that it's important for me to kind of have the scope of it. But I would say as well that I do agree with taking your guys. Like, in all the conversation we've had, I don't actually have a player that I would never draft because anything can happen. Guys fall, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to absolutely do this. In a keeper league, I think it's a completely different situation. Like with in yours, you know, 50 guys are off the board. I think it's open season at that point. I'm not looking like, is this guy like 60 or is he 70? It doesn't matter at that point. But I'm big into what you're talking about. And the most shameless plug of all time, Bogman and I, we did a book that's on Amazon. It's called 99 Fantasy Baseball Player Debates for this season, and Jake actually took part in it, and that was the whole discussion, and it was figuring out how to decipher between two similar areas of people, and we have judges like Jake and industry people kind of battling it out. It's a boxing style format, because I'm all about this discussion on how do you draft, how do you make those decisions, not just based on rank, because that's not what the whole story is about.
100%. Go buy Bogman and Welsh's book. It's on Amazon. Please, go give them your money.
Also
buy Joe Pisapia's Fantasy Black Book for baseball. Also, get the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package and get Jake's rankings. And if you want my rankings, you can email me and Venmo me. That works too. Totally down. Let's take a break. We come back. The Yankees released their lineup today, and it's interesting. Let's talk about it when we come back on FST.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
All right, so the Yankees released their lineup for spring training today. And again, it's now 6 days before the regular season begins. And we've kind of projected what the Yankees lineup was going to be, and this was not it. So let me read it to you, and then I want to get your thoughts. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I don't really know what to think. Like, my first instinct was like, oh, man, this is fun. But, like, is that good? I don't know. So I wanted to get your thoughts, Chris and Jake. Leading off, playing right field, it's Aaron Judge. It goes Judge, Stanton, instead of hitting 2-3 or 2-4 or 3-4, they're betting 1-2. Judge, Stanton, Bird the lefty, separating the three righties, including Sanchez. So it's Judge, Stanton, Bird, or Gary Sanchez. Then Aaron Hicks is batting 5th. Didi is 6th. Brandon Drury, 7. Neil Walker, 8. And Brett Gardner, 9. The most obvious take for me, Jake, is this would be brutal for Brett Gardner's value, particularly in points leagues where he's actually been a pretty consistently good player. That's brutal for Brett Gardner's value. But what do you think of this lineup as a whole, especially if we do wind up seeing this here on opening day?
We're not seeing it. I think this is the Yankees just having a little bit of fun. This is just the fact that spring training, you can do what you want to do and, you know, just take her and see what happens here. You're just seeing what's that. I know the whole thing about, you know, Cespedes batting second and Gallo batting second and getting your better hitters further up in the lineup, all that type of stuff. They're not going to use this lineup during the season, especially if Gardner's in the lineup. You don't bat lead off with Aaron Judge, despite the fact that he draws some walks. You don't have somebody. You don't want somebody. I said this to Chris a few minutes ago during the break about something else, but I'm going to use the term again. And it seems like they've used this term like five times this week. You don't want a binary outcome at the top of the lineup. No. And that's the same thing with Gallo. You don't want that the second hole too. You don't want your out to be a hit, most likely a home run or a strikeout. Maybe you get some walks mixed in there because both of them have a good bound base percentage. You don't want that at the top of your lineup. You like to see that. You're your number three hitter, but the whole point in your one and two guys is to not just get on base, but to get on base and get a double, get in scoring position quickly. Hitting home runs or striking out or walking is either first base or home. Like, you don't want that. So I think they're just having some fun in the spring training. It's fun to see home run, home run, home run, home run to start the game, but it's just fun to see.
Chris, what do you think of this lineup?
I mean, I've heard this like Stanton hitting two thing has been kicked around, and maybe even going into the season, maybe they would have Judge. It's interesting just seeing Judge being the leadoff guy. I don't know. They've had a lot of this weird tinkering where we've had, like, you know, big guys. Remember, the Cubs had Schwarber leading off for a bit, and guys trying to do this, trying to get these guys more at-bats. I get the logic of, you know, you're getting these guys more at-bats. You're adjusting pitchers' ability to, you know, go at these two players. It would boost value if that were to happen, which I agree with Jake, by the way. There's no way this happens. But if it were to happen, it would boost values of, oh my God, RBI opportunities for Gary Sanchez and Aaron Hicks. I freaking love Aaron Hicks late in drafts or in deeper leagues. That would be awesome. It's actually a lot of Yankees I love here. Drury, I own tons of shares of. Neil Walker is a big value. And a lot of these guys would be an incredible RBI opportunities. But I don't know, man. How possibly would they go Judge Stanton? I just don't see them doing that. Gardner is a speed setter, table setter. That's what you want at your leadoff. I think Judge is set for a little bit of regression, so I don't buy it.
I think everybody believes that Judge is probably set for a little bit of regression. You mentioned your love for Aaron Hicks here, Welsh, and I like Aaron Hicks too, but I did read this statistic from a Yankee blog actually earlier this morning, and I'm going to read it to you exactly. It doesn't sound like the Yankees, this is from River Ave Blues, it doesn't sound like the Yankees will steal a ton of bases this year. Quote from Aaron Boone, We have certainly some guys athletically with some speed that we'll be able to take advantage of hopefully taking some extra bases when they're available. But I also think we'll be conservative because of our lineup and because I'm not really big on making outs on the bases. You hear that, Jake. Does that scare you off a little bit of a Brett Gardner, of an Aaron Hicks, guys that had the potential to steal 20 bases, certainly, but with a manager that's not really interested in making outs, quote-unquote, on the base paths, does that steer you away a little bit?
It doesn't, because I wasn't projecting that much to begin with. Also because my concern with Brett Gardner is also the 150 games. So I was never going after Brett Gardner and be like, oh my gosh, I'm getting 20 plus steals. You know what? I hope I get around 15. If he gets me a little bit more than that, it's kind of the icing on the cake cliche. So I'm not steering away from him. Whereas, like, all of a sudden, like, oh, I can't believe we're losing 10 stolen bases. And the fact is, this is a coach speak thing too. It's not like they're going to get Brett Gardner on first base and be like, nope, you're not allowed to steal second. Nope, you're not allowed. Don't do it. You don't do it at all. Because if you also got too, with Stanton and Judge, they have enough plate presence and approach that they can be patient. Whoever's batting number two, if it's one of them, or what, depending if they're at number three or whatever. Gardner's smart enough. He'll still finish with 15 or 20 at the end of the year.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Gardner actually said in the same interview, Brett Gardner said, listen, I was on first base and I didn't have the red light by any means, but I was on first base and I actually noticed pitchers noticing me. And I realized that I was more of a nuisance at first base and making the pitcher distracted when throwing to an Aaron Judge, when throwing to Gary Sanchez, that I caused more harm than being on first base rather than running 90 feet to second. So it actually cautioned him a little bit, Welsh, not to run as much, because he thought he did more damage bugging the pitcher at first base with the threat to steal than actually stealing.
You know what I love about that comment?
It makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, just to say, you know what I love about that comment is, like, you know, that's like a manager, like, breaking it down, like, hey, this is why you're really good. And then Brett Gardner's like, yeah, maybe you're right. And he's like, going to the media, he's like, yeah, you know what? They are much more of a nuisance. That's like them justifying to not steal bases. I just say real quick on Hicks, Gardner's not really a big target of mine. I don't worry about whether it was Gardner or Hicks, but more specifically Hicks, about like losing the stolen bases because he comes at such a low cost. I'm finding myself taking a lot of different players looking for the speed. I call them stuff and things players, players that are kind of five tool. I end up owning a lot more Sinsu Chus, Odubel Herrera's, Manny Margot's a huge target of mine. So, you know, I wouldn't be taking Aaron Hicks like, oh my God, I'm hoping this is going to be a late 20 stolen bases. I never really bought into that. And Steamer Projections is putting him at like a 15-10 season. I think he could surpass potentially both in that lineup. And maybe he'll have some good counting on the runs and RBIs. But yeah, I don't look at Yankees as a speed team. I look at them like, oh, great. I can get 20 homers from almost any single position on this team.
Well, let me stick with the Yankees then here, because we talked about Jeff Samardzija before, and that reminded me of another guy that I don't really think it really reminded me, but I think with the Yankees and with pitching, it kind of brings me to Masahiro Tanaka a little bit. We all like Luis Severino a lot, and I think Sonny Gray kind of is what he is, and Jake and I talked about that. But Masahiro Tanaka is a guy that I have found myself this spring being higher on than a lot of my peers. And I think that the strikeout rate, the swinging strike rate is very, very good. Obviously, he allowed way too many fly balls and home runs last year. That's probably going to continue in Yankee Stadium. But I kind of trust Tanaka, maybe a little bit irrationally. Welsh, where are you at Tanaka?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely on him. He's in this territory where, so one of the things I've been implementing in a lot of drafts, I don't go a lot of early pitching. Obviously, it's very league dependent and you know, your category dependent on what you're doing. But I don't tend to go with a lot of early pitching. I start to kind of like pick at it around round four, maybe five, something like that, unless it's obviously a bigger league. So what ends up happening is I want to get like a solid number two.
Right.
It's probably centered around a guy like maybe Darvish or Archer. And Tanaka ends up being a player that I really want to target. He had awesome second. I mean, his first and second half are worlds apart. They're almost two-run difference. He had a 5.5 ERA in the first half last year to with an under four, or closer to 3.5 last year. Good strikeouts. I think he's underrated this year, and we're paying a little bit less than we did last year. So I buy on him.
Jakey?
I actually don't. I'm one of the people that's not in on Tanaka, and I was an apologist last year for everything that Chris said, and I, like, he's not wrong in what he's saying.
Oh, you're burned.
That's why
you
I was saying. Yeah, it's like, no, but it's not just being burned. As I'm watching this spring, and it's all the same concerns we have for the first half last year. Maybe he's going to start turning. Maybe he's going to be the bizarro Adam LaRoche of pitchers, where all of a sudden he sucks in the first half and he's great in the second half. And so that's like maybe that's what we're looking here, and if that's the case, you know, maybe he's a good buy low, but I'm not where he's going in drafts. Similar to everything Chris said, the people who are buying him at that price, he's buying him inside the top 20 pitchers because of that. And I'm not ready to invest there. If he gets down to the low 20s, around 30, like I'm looking right now, I have him right around, well, before the injury to Samardzija, that's where I had him. I had him Cole, Tanaka, Samardzija, Kyle Hendricks for the ratios, Luis Castillo, who I believe a lot in, as you know. That's where I had him in that range. A lot of people, most people don't have him that low, so I haven't got him anywhere. And the spring is doing no confidence for me to thinking that we're going to see that second half pitcher again. If I'm wrong, I have no problem with it. If I'm right, and I'm going to do what I did last year and just try to buy him before the end of the first half.
You know, it's really interesting. Like you mentioned, the spring's doing him no favors. I haven't looked at one spring statistic when it comes to Masahiro Tanaka. Like, I have not a clue what he has done. I just assume like he'll turn it. Because like last year, he had an unbelievable spring, and on opening day, he let up like six home runs. So I've kind of ignored the spring purposely when it's come to Tanaka. So I have absolutely no idea what he's done in the spring. None.
Well, then I have a question for you and Welsh when we come back from the break.
Yeah, well, you can ask it now. It's a tease.
No, I mean, we only have a minute. We're not going to get to be time to finish it.
Well, I want to know what the question is now. We don't have the answer. I kind of want to know what the question is.
I was piquing the interest. This is a time for people to come back too. From
interest peaked. Interest peaked.
No. So there you go. Now you have to wait. You have to wait for the tease.
Frustrating. That's frustrating.
I'm interested. I am frustrated, too.
We do
it's only the second date, guys.
Jake, I could go so many directions with that quote from you.
I know.
Before we hit the break, though, I want to just ask a quick question. How excited are you, Jake, that the Mets, for the first time in their history, are going to get their big five days in a row?
Not at all. Because that's going to be the only time it happens.
I love it. That's the only reason I wanted to ask. Because I knew you'd somehow turn it into a negative. And you did. You just didn't let me know.
Because it'll happen once, and then three of them will be in the DL next week.
Perfect. Perfect. At some point next hour, we'll get back into Michael Conforto. I know I keep bringing him up, but I think it's as we get really, really late into draft season, like, Conforto has become like the latest conundrum. So I do want to get into him as well coming back because there's a lot of people that don't know what to do with him. Like, Florio and I had a bit of an argument, but like a debate about him because he's optimistic and he's excited and he hit for a cycle and he threw all these home runs. And I'm just like, and I hate to say this, it's the Mets. When it's an injury, something's going to go wrong. Where should you draft Michael Conforto now? It's a discussion that has to happen, and we're going to have it here on Fantasy Sports Today. But when we come back, we'll find out what Jake's question was for Chris Welsh and myself. Stick around. More Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Calling all drivers, want a career that will take you places? Then Coach USA and Megabus is the place for you. Coach USA and Megabus, leaders in the local and intercity bus transportation industry, are looking for career-minded, conscientious drivers with a valid CDL Class A or B license with passenger endorsement. They offer paid training, competitive salary, and many benefits. Apply now and start driving to a better future. Visit CoachUSA.jobs. That's CoachUSA.jobs.
I just realized, Welsh, we only have 5 minutes left to hang out together.
I know, it's kind of sad.
It's too quickly. Too quickly. It's frustrating.
I'm kind of sad. This has been such a great time.
You're more than welcome to hang out. I'm not going anywhere.
He's got appointments.
Yeah, well, appointments, right? Yeah. If Jake doesn't also tell us like what he was teasing, I can't handle it physically.
Jake, what were you teasing?
All right, so I want to ask you guys. I've been asking a lot of people this spring, and I think it's a really good point that nobody's talking about. And Greg, you'll know what it is because I brought this up to you in another conversation. But Chris said the same thing. I keep saying this. It's going to what Greg said about Tanaka. I haven't watched anything. I haven't paid attention to anything. And my point, Chris, was why do we do this every spring? We make excuses for the bad. We're like, oh, he's a pitcher. It's a pitcher. Doesn't mean anything. He's working through new pitches. He's doing this. He's doing that. It doesn't matter. Oh, this hitter is the hitter we always know him to be. He's just struggling this spring. He'll be fine. On the flip side, it's like, oh my God, this guy is crushing. He's hitting 500 with a 1200 OPS, or this pitcher now has 17 strikeouts in 12 innings. We always take all the good from spring and none of the bad. And I don't think that's smart in any sport, and actually in any business.
I agree with you. I would actually take nothing from spring if you want to be fair about any of it. Don't take the positive. Don't take the negative. I would have, there's one player, one, that I am considering what happened in spring and I'm taking into heavy consideration. Only one, because I try to ignore all this stuff. If we did this, Mikel Franco would be drafted 50th overall every single year because he's amazing in the spring and he sucks when the season starts. The one player this year, I wish we were going to break so I could tease this for 12 minutes. But the one player I would pay attention to the spring stats is Shohei Ohtani. I've seen him in person twice now. In the same week, I saw him hit against the Diamondbacks, and then I went to the B game where he pitched against like the Tijuana Tequilas or something. I don't even know what they were. And he, the worst swing I've ever seen hitting, and he got rocked, and he's been getting rocked. That's the only guy that I think the spring stats have drastically affected the ADPs and should, and people should pay attention to that. Otherwise, I like to what you said, guys are working on stuff, positive or negatively. Guys are hitting homers against, a single-A pitcher that's going in his first, spring training mound visit. I just don't buy into any of the stats one way or another outside of a player like Shohei Ohtani.
I think that's reasonable because not only have we never seen Ohtani in the majors, like, this is the first time we've seen him in the States. And it's not like we have minor league details to back it up. Of course, we have seen a ton of Japanese pitchers come over and be successful in their first year. That's why I was very, very in on Ohtani. But I do have some concern now with what's going on, Jake.
Yeah, I think everybody has to. Like, the fact is, this is the downside of drafting early. So when I drafted early for labor, it was the second week of February, I got Ohtani at what I thought was a value for where I took him, because I took him around pitcher 28 to 30, somewhere around there. Now, I won't even take them there, to Chris's point, because this is potentially, there's the downside of their Arabus or all the pitchers that come over that don't work, on the flip side of the ones that do, like Nomo and the rest and Darvish when he first came over. So you just know that it's probably, you could get either case. And right now, it definitely doesn't look good. Obviously, he's on my team, so I hope that changes, and maybe he is just getting adjusted to baseball and the translation and comfortable with the teammates and the catchers that he has never played with before. That's my hope, but that's a slim hope right now from what we've seen, as Chris said.
Yeah, it is, and that's true. It's a hope now with Ohtani, and I think he's even more of a question mark in drafts than when he was just a month or so ago, which makes this wild. Chris, it's been a really fun hour, man.
Yeah, thank you. It's good. Finally, you get to have the voice behind the Welsh, and I get to spend some time with you, Greg, and I always love whenever I can do some stuff with Jake, so thanks, guys.
It's been awesome. Thanks so much for hanging out. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. Jake and I will get into Michael Conforto a little bit and a whole lot more when it comes to baseball. Hour number two of FST on FNTSY continues on right after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Hour number two, FST, Fantasy Sports Today, live with you, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am Greg Sussman, joined once again by the all-in kid, Jake Seeley. Jake, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, it's going to be a good, like, I got four straight hours. You have the four straight hours. Do you do the same thing after like a four straight hour day like I do, where I just, if my phone rings, I need time where I'm just not talking?
No, I don't really do that. I kind of just need lunch. That's kind of a thing.
Well, I mean, that's big too. I mean, that's going to be the first thing I do when I'm done. But at the same time, I won't answer my phone for a good hour or two if it does ring, unless it's like work related. But I don't want to talk anymore. I'm done. Four straight hours is enough for me.
No, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really bother me in all honesty.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. I said it before in last hour. I know we talked about it a day or two ago, but I wanted to bring it up again because the optimism continues to build when it comes to Michael Conforto. Like, there's momentum about a month or so ago, like, don't even draft this guy. It's not worth it. You don't want to get involved. And then, all right, it looks like he's going to be that May 1st time. Well, May 1st was when he was coming back. All right, cool. Now it looks like he's going to beat that May 1st timetable, and now you're more intrigued. The last time I brought this up to you, you said, yeah, Conforto, healthy, that's great. But, like, Brandon Nimmo is there, and Juan Lagares is there, and they have Jay Bruce, and you had a Cespedes. So Conforto is going to be kind of misplaced in center field. You don't know what the playing time deal is. And not that he would be, like, glued to the bench, but there isn't this lock of playing 162 games, basically. And then he hits for, like, a cycle yesterday or 2 days ago. And I'm just like, and then Florio's basically saying, well, maybe this discount's going to be worth it on this guy. And you're hearing more and more people speak like Michael Florio and be like, I can get Conforto for a discount now. He's going to be healthy. He could be back in the middle of April. He was as good as Aaron Judge was earlier in the year. I really like Michael Conforto. So I have to bring it up to you. Now what do we do about Michael Conforto?
Now you're spending a lot more than you were a week ago, let alone 2 weeks ago. And if you want him this weekend, you're going to have to jump that price up because it is. I mean, this guy wasn't supposed to be ready until May. He wasn't even supposed to be playing like he is. And now it's not just what he talked about. He had two home runs in a game yesterday. And now they're talking about potentially the second week starting every day for the Mets. This guy's way ahead of the timetable. Conforto, if he is playing, they're not going to put him on the bench. My concern, like I said, was that if he's not 100% when he comes back, do they rotate him to make sure he's not playing every single day? If he's going to be 100%, he's going to play every single day because you can make the argument. Yes, you can make this argument. He is their best outfielder hitting wise, including Cespedes. He hasn't hit his ceiling yet there, but he does have one to potentially surpass Cespedes. He's really got to get more ability against lefties, but he's been doing a vast improvement on that. My biggest concern is the way that he got injured, swinging and throwing out his shoulder. To me, that's just like, is this, I don't know if you know this or you've ever had it happen to you, I have a friend who does, but once you dislocate your shoulder once, it's like a concussion. It's easier to do it again and again and again and again. I would want to act like this is like a Dr. A question. Could it happen again?
100%. I think it's a really, really good conversation. We've asked Dr. A about it, and he basically told us, listen, shoulder should be fine. He should be healed as long as he had enough time, and it seems like he has. I think it's really, really tough. We might be looking forward to figure it out. There's a lot of tough stuff to figure out. That's one of them. We'll take a break here. We'll come back with more FST and FNTSY.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
I said earlier, Jake, that, you know, a lot of this is about me, because whatever, it's my show.
What are you, Raven?
That was a nice reference. That was like a 20-year-old reference. I'm so in it.
I know, like 5% of the people listening got that.
Love it. Love it. So in my draft, there's a chance I have the option. These are I guess there's four pitchers I have the option with, so I'll throw it at you. I know I kind of asked you this yesterday, but I'm going to do it again. Rank these four pitchers in a points league. I know Florio's my guy for the points league, so I talk to him every day. Don't worry. Madison Bumgarner, Steven Strasburg, Jacob deGrom, and Carlos Carrasco. Rank those four.
Please. I am going to say, look, I'm still going to put Bumgarner first.
I agree.
I know, like, people are just saying, oh, look how bad he was when he came back. I think he forced himself back. I think he tried to come back too early. Knows that he screwed up with the bike accident. And just, I think that he was just, you know what? I want to get back out in the field. And he just wasn't. And you look at Bumgarner before that. That guy's a monster. And the fact is, you're going to get the innings. And that's the biggest thing. You said points. So I want the innings and the strikeouts. Yep. And I think that if you're looking for safe, DeGrom's the safest of all of them. That's the thing here is if you're talking about safety, he is the safest. But I would go Bumgarner. I would actually go Strasburg second. I know the risk with him is he only gets you 160 innings, but the upside is just so great that I would go there. And then I would go DeGrom, Carrasco.
I totally agree with you. That's exactly how I have it ranked also.
It makes you feel good then.
It does. It completely does make me feel good. Although if I had the choice between Bummy and Strasburg, which I might, I want to take Bummy for the safety. He's a true ace. Last year, he was number three pitcher off the board. Strasburg is so damn tempting because I've never actually really been a Strasburg owner. I only owned him in leagues where it just simply wasn't that important to me. So I'm tempted, but I think ultimately, as my friends like to say, I play defense, so I would take Bumgarner for sure.
Yeah, the biggest thing is if you take Strasburg too, just know that he could be a league-changing pitcher. Because if he ever pitched 200 innings for you, good God, forget about it. I mean, you'd just be loving that. But the fact is, if you take Strasburg, you're going to want to circle back and take a Carlos Martinez over a James Paxton or Otani or somebody or Robbie Ray, somebody who could potentially torpedo your team. You don't want to go back-to-back risk like that. So if you go Bumgarner, you could take one of those instead. And that's just kind of how you set up your drafts. And this is why we always tell everybody, as you say it time and again, when we tell you these things, if you look at the rankings, they could be a lot different depending on what you are doing in your draft.
Yeah, absolutely. The rankings totally change based on the point style of your draft and ultimately the players that are left. Like, it's keeper league. And I have this tier for me with Carlos Santana, Miguel Cabrera, Eric Hosmer, Matt Carpenter. That may not be the tier for you, but in my league with my scoring statistics, that one makes sense. Like, Carlos Santana is very high here, and I recognize that. But these four first basemen happen to be really, really good in my league, and I want one of the four of them. The crazy thing is where I have to take them. Like, I thought, all right, take them 5-6, it's perfect. But I was kind of looking it over this morning, and the top 50 players are off the board. Literally, the top 50 players are off the board, which means there's a four-round difference. I might have to take these guys in the 3-4 turn. I might have no choice.
All right, and that's just this is knowing what your draft is to everything else. As you said it during the first hour, this is the blueprint, a blueprint that you have to adjust to yours. This isn't the blueprint. Like, this is exactly what you do.
You didn't get that reference, huh?
I didn't hear what you said.
You said, oh, the blueprint, and I said Matt Morgan.
Oh, okay. I like my reference better.
The 5% of people that got the Raven reference, cut that in half. Maybe 2.5% just got the blueprint.
Get the Matt Morgan one.
It is what it is, ultimately. Timmy Lincecum, this kind of just broke this morning. Timmy Lincecum, we knew he was going to start on the DL because he simply isn't ready to go. He has a blister now, so it could push him back even more. We'll see. I'm not sure how serious that is. But Lincecum, there was thought when he signed that he could be the closer. And talking about closers here for a moment, there's a bunch of teams that still remain unsettled. And I know, Jake, you and I actually did talk about this about 2 weeks ago. Closers on some of these bad teams. And Texas in particular, I've kind of stayed away. Like, I'm looking at my reliever rankings, and I guess Alex Claudio is the Texas reliever that I have highest, but I have like zero confidence in Alex Claudio.
I have zero confidence in anybody pretty much in Texas, just because I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know who they want it to be. I don't know that it will be anybody specifically, and it won't just be a mix and match for the entire year. I feel like we go through this with Texas every single season. You know, we pick somebody that we all think this should be the best option, and you get a little bit of time where he is, and then it's somebody different, or that person gets hurt or falls apart for a few weeks, and they plug in the other guy, and he has success for a little while. This is why I've made the argument over the past couple of years that I'm willing to pay up for top tier closers. I actually don't have Jansen or Kimbrel anywhere because they're going just way too high for me. Yeah. But that next tier, I want one of them. It's similar to the bell cow running back in fantasy football, where I want my bell cow running back. I want my bell cow closer. I want the guy that I know, one, has a job, and two, also has stats that aren't going to hurt me. Like Fernando Roddy has a job, but the stats are going to kill me. I don't know. Do I really want that job? Do I really want that saves? I want somebody who I'm not afraid of that's ever going to lose his job for the entire season unless he gets hurt, and that's something we can't predict. And two, I want the numbers that go with it. And that's why you look at it every single year. People say don't pay for saves. And I think that's now not only a myth, but I think it's foolish advice, because especially in leagues that have auction budgets, you get to the second, third week and everybody's chasing the same people. And if you miss out, you don't get your closer. If you do and you pay and it's not the right guy, like it's a Keone Kila, then you're screwed either way. So I think it's a mistake when people just say openly, don't pay for saves. Just wait.
Right. So I think the advice, like, I think it's twofold in that, yes, I totally agree with you that you're not probably paying up for Kimbrel. You're not paying up for Kenley Jansen. You're not paying up necessarily even for Aldis Chapman. And Frank and I have discussed this a lot because we're in a lot of leagues together. But you want to live in that next tier because you want some guy of safety. And you've always said this, right? Like, you want one safe guy and you want one like upper tier safe guy. And then a guy that, like, maybe he's not exactly an upper tier closer, but he is safe. And you get your two closers and then you kind of move on. Maybe you pick a third very, very late in draft. But it's true. When it comes to your fab, everyone has the same $100, give or take. Or depending on your league, is $1,000, whatever. But they're all chasing the same guys. And then you're playing this game where you don't know what somebody is worth. Not that it matters to spend all your money, but like, you have no idea what you should be spending, and it makes it so much harder. If you could just nail your closers, and listen, I understand waiting, and you don't have to be the first guy to open up that closer tier. You don't. But you gotta make sure that you grab a couple that you feel safe about. Otherwise, you're behind the eight ball. And that's just the truth.
Yeah. I could not agree more. It's the same thing I did in labor. Like, my third closer is Blake Parker. He might not even be the closer, but that's because I didn't want to make that risk of, like, I thought Blake Parker, this is the second week of February again when we drafted in labor. My second closer at the time, like, if that was my second, I'd have one. Last year, you go back to actually to the year when I won labor last year, fortunately, year before that, I played the waiting game, and it was more because of how the runs were going and stuff like that. I kept thinking about it, and then I didn't jump, and that was part of the, you know what, I should have listened to my own advice. I came out of the draft with two closers. One had lost his job by the beginning of the season. The other one got hurt. So I had zero to start the season. I didn't have a single closer because I waited and only had two.
Yeah, and that's brutal. It's a brutal spot to be in. We're going to talk more about closers today and relief pitchers in general today on the Fantasy Best Friends Forever, so check that out. It's coming up about noon Eastern time. It's a really, really good show. Florio's kind of put it together today, so definitely check that out. We'll write the closers. We'll kind of break down.
Is that the new thing?
What?
That you like what? Like, yesterday was Frank, today's Florio.
Yeah,
like, you're kind of like rotating.
Yeah, I wanted Frank and Florio to host a couple days. So I thought it was cool.
Oh, that's cool.
I thought it was cool to get Frank a day and Florio a day.
That's cool.
Yeah, so Florio put the whole thing together. It's going to be awesome. We have said repeatedly we like that Osuna, Rivero, Knebel section, and we'll break down which one you should draft and why and so on and so forth. So check that out on the BFFs coming up in about 2 hours from now, a little bit less than that. Live YouTube, Periscope, certainly here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network as well. Let me move on, Jake, to... I don't really know to where, to be honest with you. I'm kind of just looking at like the guys in my draft that are around and
oh, I thought you were talking about topics in general. I was going to say, how the hell did Zay Jones get off for lack of evidence? Did you hear that?
No, I did not, to be honest.
Oh yeah, he was let off on, this was the exact quote, lack of evidence.
Love it.
what, the video we all saw across America? Lack of evidence? Are you effing kidding me?
I got nothing, man. I got nothing. Yeah.
I don't get it. Like I said, like if I came into the studio right now, stabbed you with a knife and put it down on the table and left, to be like, well, we don't have any evidence.
Well, we don't know that it was you. You were under the influence. It might have been like a different personality, something like that.
Ignore the cameras that are on, the videotape that we actually have.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. So, yeah, like I said, I've been preparing my draft. Major auction. Do you like, in baseball, do you like auction or snake drafts better?
Auction.
Yeah. Just like 100%. In, no matter what, in football too?
Yeah, in all sports. Because the fact is you can be on in every single player and you're not subject to runs. It's somewhere in some part of the draft. Here's the biggest one. Actually, I just go right to this. In fantasy baseball, if you play snake, only one person can ever get Mike Trout. That's just the fact. He's going number one. Nobody else ever has a shot at getting Mike Trout. And that's just, you just look at it that way. It's not necessarily the most fair advantage. It definitely is. It's not fair in general. And you get stuck in a run in the middle of the draft. You know, you get stuck and you're subject to the draft.
All right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've always felt the same way too. I'm an auction guy through and through. When we come back, as I was prepping for drafts, I looked at the catcher position and I realized there's no good ones. Jake and I will try to find one though. When we come back here at FST.
What's up, everybody? I'm Gabriel Moranci.
And I'm Cam Stewart.
Inviting you to join us weekdays at 4 o'clock Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network as we break down all the big games on a nightly basis. The Tony Cicada joins us. I think he's cheating on his domestic partner, but they don't need to know, and neither does yours. Forget about bowling shoes. We're all about winners. Game Time Decisions Radio with Red Heat and Rage. Weekdays at 4 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Factors, perfect daily fantasy site with casual recreational player, flat prize pool, smaller fields, single entry contests only. Fantasy Factor always has fun contests going on, and this year Fantasy Factor is running a $100,000 home run derby. Sign up today and enter at fantasyfactor.com. It's amazing what you learn, Jake, when like you're doing your own research for like your own draft. Like, all right, I've been talking about rankings or whatever for months now, right? Like, you've been staring at players and you're discussing them literally for months. I know you've been even more in tune to it for longer and deeper. But when I start preparing for my draft, there's one catcher captain, it's Gary Sanchez. Fine, he's a top catcher. I got that. After that, you got Buster Posey and Wilson Contreras in whatever order. I'm not trying to argue that order. And then after that, it gets like really terrible really, really quickly. Like, yeah, I know. I like Salvador Perez and I like JT Realmuto. But you were talking about closers before and how people say, don't trade, don't spend up for closers. And I'm with you. I like one catcher leagues. That's what I'm in. But if I buy that advice, and I don't want to pay up for my catcher, especially in a one catcher league, who am I drafting a catcher? Like, I'm looking at this list of players. Yadier Molina, Wilson Ramos, Wellington Castillo. Kind of like, this is the crew that I have to choose from? Like, if I'm in a one-catcher league, who should my catcher be?
If you're in a one-catcher league, I would just wait until you get towards the end of the draft and, you know, take the whoever's left of like a... I'm looking right now, Lucroy, Brian McCann, Castillo. I would try to avoid getting down to McCann because of the playing time concerns.
Right.
Everybody, I think there's about 11 you feel comfortable with, because I'd probably throw Chirinos in the playing time, but he's fringy just because there's real question of if he can really come through and the batting average stinks. But you know, everybody out there that is supporting two catchers is going to say, this is why you play with two catchers, because you can wait till the end of the draft. Well, I don't necessarily mean the end of the draft for one, because somebody is going to draft two catchers. There are going to be two or three teams that do it, just like the two or three teams in your league that draft the backup defense or a backup kicker or something like that, or you know, even three tight ends or even a second tight end, honestly. The fact is you look at it, there's still not it's still negative value once you get right around to 12, because, you know, it's Monty Grandal. What's his concern with Austin Barnes? You know, the factor is, you know, he gets to face more because he faces more righties, and Barnes gets the lefties, but there's more righties in baseball, but he's in a platoon. As I mentioned, Robinson Chirinos brings you no average. You're giving up a category altogether. So I'd probably cut off. I like Zunino's been moving up. I think he's going to go way too high for his potential. I like him, but he's going to be going around Salvador Perez, who I trust a lot more. So I'd be happy with, like I said, I'd be happy with like a Ramos, Lucroy, something like that. I'd like Wellesley Castillo for his power, but that's about the cutoff. I mean, as soon as you start getting outside the top 12, I mentioned Gradal is one of them, playing time. Russell Martin, what's he even got left? Travis d'Arnaud, playing time, can't stay healthy. Austin Hedges is going to hit 200, maybe 15, 20 home runs. It's just, this is why catcher is miserable.
I'm not even like I'm not even past the top 12, Jake. Like, I'm past like the top four, and I'm like, this is disgusting. Like, seriously.
Like, well, there's only like, so 1, 2, 3,
five,
four,
the top
there's
five, sorry.
I was going to say six.
Who's your six?
That should get over 400 at bats.
Who's your six?
The six there, Sanchez, Contreras, Posey, Real Muto, Perez, Yadier Molina.
So Yadier
get over 400 at bats.
So Yadier's that 6-1. Okay. Yeah.
But there's a question too. I mean, you know, sure. I was on his resurgence 2 years ago, and that fortunately paid out for me because I got him in for nothing. But the whole concern you had 2 years ago was the fact that you saw the year before that, and it looked like he had hit the wall and he was done.
Yeah.
What if now this year? What if that comes back?
Totally. 1,000%. 1,000%. Now, I am in...
So I have six over 400 at bats, but I only have five I'm comfortable with.
That's a problem. After those five guys, it's all garbage. So you might as well just take the last one and just wait on it. And I'm thinking of what I'm considering doing, and this is what like people have recommended to me. I'm in a daily transaction league, which I think is the only way to play. I've told you that. I hate weekly leagues in any sport. Basketball, football obviously is all weekly, but like basketball, baseball in particular, I love the daily transactions. And they're saying I should just draft Yasmani Grandal and Austin Barnes and be pumped about it.
See, I hate that strategy.
Me too. Like, I don't want to waste two roster spots on the catchers.
Exactly. So you're wasting two roster spots to get one catcher.
Yeah.
Why? Why are you going to do that? Because now you're limited to any potential breakout you could have on your bench. I've seen a lot of people. I've actually seen people say to do that in two catcher leagues too.
That's crazy. But like for me. Yeah. I mean, because you're getting the logic is you're getting one really good catcher in the combination of Austin Barnes and Yasmani Grandal, and I get that, but that last roster spot which I'm using for the catcher, like that could be my lottery ticket spot. And you and I have talked about this for years about using your bench as simple lottery tickets, and you kind of just draft these younger players, and especially in baseball where they basically play every day. Yes, you have your pitchers that are interchangeable, but you want to leave that hitter bench spot open for a lottery ticket. That, listen, if it doesn't pay off for May and June, that's fine. You move on, but you got to have that open for lottery tickets.
You do, and a lot of times, like your entire bench isn't going to hit. But you can look at last year, and I wish I could think of it who was last year, but my second to last pick in labor last year, was it Avisail Garcia? I think it's somebody along those lines. But that's the point. That was on my bench. If I take a second catcher, maybe that's a two-catcher league, but let's say it was a one-catcher league, and I spend that spot on a second catcher. I just missed out on somebody who was a game-changer in fantasy last year because you got him for nothing, and he's an everyday starter, ends up being a top 20 outfielder, a top 15 outfielder in a lot of leagues. So that's the point. Why are you going to do this? Same thing, like you said, fantasy football. I hate to do it because I love the guy when he was playing. He's a super nice guy. He's an awesome interview just in general, but I always called it the Greg Jennings rule. You know that. It was at the end of his career at Green Bay when he kind of fallen off, and all Greg Jennings would do is give you 800 yards and 5 touchdowns. You never wanted to put him in your lineup, and that was my point. Why are you going to have somebody on your bench that you never want to put in your lineup? You want your bench to be filled with somebody who could potentially change the game and become a full-time starter, a wide receiver 2, a RB1 for you or something like that. Same thing in fantasy baseball. Don't fill your benches with the also-rans of the world. Like, what's the point of putting somebody who you know is going to hit 250, 10, and 10 for the entire season? Like, where's the upside there? You want somebody who could potentially break out.
Does it make sense to take a catcher early if like you just hate all the players that are standing there? Like I said,
it's
in my league. I'm sorry about this, but like in my league, the top 50 players are gone, right? And it's all relative, and I understand that. But I go back to my draft last year, and again, I realize I'm making this super personal, but In the fifth round, I made a huge mistake. I took Jose Ramirez. I had the 4-5 turn. I was in the one spot. I had the 4-5 turn. I took Jose Ramirez at the top of round four, at the end of round four instead of the first pick of round five, and that cost me keeping him in the third round versus the second round this year, which would have been huge. But I took Jose Ramirez because I knew I wanted him. And then for my next pick, there was nobody I wanted. There was just no hitters out there in my league that interested me. So I was like, you know what? I'll just take the best catcher left, and that wound up being Wilson Contreras. He was awesome last year, so I felt great about it. But we all say, we just said it, you know, wait around a catcher in a one-catcher league, just take the one at the end. But there's no one there you like. Is it okay to take a guy like Wilson Contreras, who I know is your number two catcher? Is it okay to take a guy like Salvador Perez and JT Realmuto if there's just no one there you like?
I would, but not where there's probably going. Like Wilson Contreras, I have 111th overall for hitters. It's just because of the value of what you're getting back. Like Gary Sanchez, who is going way before this, but I have him at 51st because if you put his numbers compared to everybody else's numbers, they are terrific for the catcher position. They blow everybody else out of the water. But you're talking about, I have him for 77, 32, and 94 with a 270 average. No steals because, you know, two steals. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Sure. But the fact is, those numbers aren't too dissimilar than Rougned Odor. Actually, they're less in the runs, and at least Rougned Odor is going to steal bases. Obviously, Odor has a lower batting average, but Odor is only two spots away from him because that's where he deserves to be when you're comparing apples to apples in numbers. Obviously, the position changes things, but that's why I'll do it. So, like, if I'm sitting there in round four and I don't like anybody, I'll take Gary Sanchez, but he's never making it there. If Wilson Contreras is there in the 10th round and I don't like anybody else, I'll do it, but again, he's not making it to that point because even in one catcher leagues, and that's always been my argument, the counter argument for the one catcher leagues, even in one catcher, somebody's always still drafting Gary Sanchez because of your position upgrade that you get to everybody else. It's like taking Gronkowski. You know, that's the fact. It's like you could say, why don't we make tight ends two tight ends? But the fact is, people still take Gronkowski at the turn of the first round. People were still taking Jimmy Graham in the first round back in the day. People are going to be taking Travis Kelce in the second round next year. So even in one tight end, one catcher, somebody is still going to do it.
100%. I completely agree with that. I think you brought up really good points when it comes to Odor. I think Gary Sanchez obviously makes sense too. You're right. There's probably always somebody else out there, but I don't know. You know,
actually, you know whose line he's very similar to is Jonathan Scope at second base. Okay. And I'd always take Jonathan Scope because second base, I'd rather, like, you need 1.5 second baseman because it's either going to be a second base or a shortstop in your middle infield position.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you need 1.5 if you play with those positions. We were in a mock draft with Steve on CBS 2 days ago, on Wednesday, and it's actually like a lot like my league. There's only one catcher, there is no middle infield, there is no corner infield, and there's only three outfielders. How much does that change the game?
That changes it a lot. Yeah. I mean, that's going back. That's I haven't played anything like that in years. Yeah. Only three outfielders on top of it.
Yep.
Honestly, that pushes, is it still nine pitchers? Because if so, that pushes the pitching. That's just that's the most obvious thing because
there were still nine pitchers, yes.
Yeah, now you're pushing over to the pitching side of things because you're just talking about the disparity of how many batters you need compared to pitchers. It's almost an even playing field,
yeah.
And what pitchers give you is that's just a fact. So that's almost now like a 50-50 split when people talk about spending, you know, the 70-30 split on hitting and pitching or 68, you know, 32 or whatever it might be is your final number. Now you're talking about 50-50. So I would honestly, now I'm more willing to wait on second and shortstop, even the corner infield. You could just wait on everything in that format.
And this is what I'm dealing with, Jake. This is what I'm dealing with. Let's take a break here. We got more baseball to come. We're into March Madness and some football stuff. Next hour, bring the analyst and the closer, Chris Venture, up here to do that. He's been on OTO a week. We thought it'd be right for him to end the week up here in the big chair as well. Stick around. More Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The sharpest fantasy sports minds are now available 24/7 straight from your mobile device. Download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app and listen live or on demand to the finest tips, strategies, and advice from your favorite fantasy personalities. It's free and available for both iOS and Android devices. Your life isn't slowing down, so why should your fantasy sports? Head to fntsy.com/radio and download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app today.
Dominate DraftKings and FanDuel Major League Baseball contests this summer with Daily Roto's MLB Projections and Optimizer. Go to dailyroto.com/premium, save 10% off with the promo code FNTSY to use all the same tools and projections that Millionaire Maker winner Drew Dickmeyer uses. And the tools don't just work for football. This is the same site that Drew used for last year's top five $150,000 DraftKings Live Final Finish. Head on over to dailyroto.com/premium, save 10% off with promo code FNTSY, and see the results for yourself. Speaking about results, I just read that Wayne Huizenga died, Jake.
Who is that?
He's the former owner of the Marlins when the first time they won the title back in 97.
Okay.
And he sold everybody off. He also owned the Miami Dolphins before Stephen Ross did.
Yeah. The Huizenga part sounded familiar, but yeah, I wasn't that familiar.
Well, there you go. Wayne Huizenga passed away. There you go.
I would attribute more, like when I think the Marlins and that mess and everything they went through, I attribute that more to Loria. That's the name that comes to mind.
Yeah, it's interesting because Huizenga did it all before Loria. Like everything right. that Loria right. did, Huizenga did.
Oh. Did he have something to do with Blockbuster?
I don't know. Did he?
Oh, because somebody just tweeted, Wayne Huizenga passes away, a salute to a membership that reminded us to be kind, please rewind, and it's a picture of a Blockbuster membership card.
Maybe he owned Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Right. There you go. I wanted to throw this out at you because it reminded me, Wayne Huizenga kind of reminded me of it. Now, you're seeing, remember when Chris Paul was traded to the Lakers and David Stern's like, we're not, no.
That's still baffling.
I'm gonna not let that happen, and I want him to play for the Clippers instead. Remember that?
Yeah.
So it reminded me of this ridiculous deal that MLB once pulled that nobody talks about. So when Wayne Huizenga sold the Marlins, he sold it back to Major League Baseball. So they had an owner for a little while. And this is, when you have a team, when you own a team, like that's your team. You could do whatever you want with it. So if Jeffrey Loria wants to run something in the ground, he could. But at the time, Jeffrey Loria owned the Expos. The Marlins were owned, minority owned, by John Henry, when I think of the primary owner. And the Red Sox were owned by, I'm forgetting now, the Major League Baseball and Bud Selig pulled off the rare three-team owner trade, which is like insane, where John Henry goes to the Red Sox, becomes the primary owner.
He made out the best.
Jeffrey Loria goes to the Marlins, and then baseball takes on the Expos.
And then gets rid of him,
and Randy Lerner creates the Nationals. So it's just like, what? And then you have trades going on between these teams, especially with the Marlins and the Expos. And I'm like, Jeffrey Loria is trading with himself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get talked about how like egregious and insane that was.
Yeah. If you never needed a perfect example of how corrupt big business and baseball and sports can be, that is, you're 100% right. And as soon as you started bringing it up, that's why I chuckled, because I knew where you're going with this, is the fact that I don't know how this didn't get a bigger spotlight. I have to think if this happened today, if it get a lot more attention, maybe with the social media world. I don't know. Again, it kind of got swept under the rug for the people that weren't paying close enough attention. Heck, if you really weren't even looking, I mean, you wouldn't even have known outside of like knowing some of these names. And also, wait, how did Henry become the owner of the Red Sox? And it's baffling to me. But like you said, I don't see how you can say that it's collusion. That's what it is.
Correct. It's actual collusion. Like if Colin Kaepernick wanted to sue the MLB for that, he could.
Yeah. I mean, if this went down in your fantasy football or fantasy baseball league, people would be like waiting outside your door to take you out.
100%. 100%. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane.
I mean, that's like, let's put it in fantasy baseball terms. I'd be like, hey, Greg, you get my team. I'm going to get Frank's team. Frank's going to take over this defunct team that nobody was taking over any before. And now we're going to go make trades with each other.
I love it. And it's true. And I actually had a cousin that basically did that. Like some team quit. So he took over and he was like making trades. I was like, what are you doing? You can't do that. He said, whatever. No, it's a fair deal. I'm like, you are running multiple teams in one league. That is illegal. I'm just picking up the players that the guy would do anyway. And I'm like,
Yeah. I'm starting the guys he would anyway. I'm making the trades he would make anyway.
Yes!
And all of a sudden, you know, he's facing his team. And yeah, I would have definitely started Albert Pujols over Mike Trout this week.
100%. And that's exactly what it is. And it's so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
That's what happens when you have power. Abuse of power.
Abuse of power. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, Jakey.
There you go.
That's what it says. That's the line.
I know.
Oh man, I had this other thing I wanted to bring up to you. In almost the same vein, when it comes to like collusion in baseball, and now I lost it, and now it's gone. I should have written it down. it's like kind of just like building on where we are, with this collusion thing, and I lost it.
Not football related.
No. It was. I thought it was baseball related. Maybe it was football. I don't know. It's gone now, just like that.
It's out the window.
It's gone. What do you think, NBA, in a little bit with Ventura? But isn't it ridiculous that the Grizzlies lost by 60 points last night? Like that is taking a brand new level.
That's I mean, you saw it. I put in the show sheet as an idea if you want to talk about it. Is that when we do? I saw that score. It was like partway through the third quarter. Somebody tweeted it out when they said they were down by 55. And I said, this is the NBA is so two-faced. Like the fact of what they did. And this has nothing to do with the fact that I'm a Bulls fan. And I would have said this for any team. The fact of what they did to go after the Bulls and say, you can't keep sitting Justin Holiday. You can't keep sitting Brooke Lopez. The Bulls of all team, mind you, who, by the way, aren't even in the top three for the potential lottery and have been winning games and have a legitimate reason not to play those guys because Lopez is a free agent. Holiday's not a long-term plan. They want to see what's in Levine. They want to see what they haven't done, who are, you know, are both injured now anyway. But they go after the Bulls, and meanwhile you have a team like the Grizzlies, like the Hawks, who are doing it even egregiously worse, especially the Grizzlies, and nothing's being said. It's like you can't just pick and choose who you enforce the rules against.
I know. 60. Like
that's
60, and, dude.
The NBA's got to do something. That's not even watchable.
No, it's not. I mean, like the rating there has to be brutal. I mean, and there's good news coming out of Memphis, too. Like Anthony Hardaway, the new coach of the Memphis Tigers. There's a lot of excitement there. And the Memphis Grizzlies lose by 60.
Yeah, I don't even know. What was their leading score last night? Like 12?
I'm going to look at it right now. I'm going to look at the box score right now.
I know. I'm kind of curious now.
Here we go. let's see here. So the Memphis Grizzlies lost last night to the Charlotte Hornets by...
They scored 79.
Yeah, by 60. 140 to 79.
Tyreek had 16.
No, Wayne Selden at 18 off the bench.
Oh, Wayne Selden.
Jarrell Martin put up 12 and 8.
After his 14 years at Kansas.
Yeah, right? 12 and 8 for...
You ever notice that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. All the time.
Kansas seems to have people that have been there for 7 years all the time.
Who is the other dude that was balding?
Oh! It starts with a P. Oh, shoot.
He was there for 75 years.
It's like they're like Kansas basketball started. He was with the team.
100%. And it wasn't. He like played with Wayne Selden forever, obviously.
Right. He did.
I'll just look up the 2015 Kansas Jayhawks because he's obviously on that team.
I was going to look up 2013 Kansas Jayhawks.
All right, here we go. The answer is not Frank Mason or Wayne Selden. It was not Chick Diallo. This is a really good team. This is a really good team. Carlton Bragg. Wow. Perry Ellis. That was it.
Perry Ellis. There you go. That's him.
Perry Ellis. He was on this team for 75
years. Ellis was like recruited in like 2001.
You want to talk about players that have played in college forever. Like Joel Berry has been on UNC for 25 years.
Joel Berry does feel like he's been there forever.
25 years, Joel Berry.
He happened to just start every single year. That's why he started as a freshman and came straight through. But even as a USC fan, I've kind of got that sense this year. Like to myself, I felt like it feels like it's been more like 5 years.
It might be because he got hurt or whatever. But like, there's just certain guys that just are on these teams forever, and you cannot believe that they are still in college, especially because I don't know what it is about college basketball players, but they age very quickly. So like not Wayne Selden, Perry Ellis was bald. Joel Berry has gray in his beard now.
Wrinklehead for Duke.
Sure.
What was his name?
Wrinklehead?
Actually, the guy with the wrinkled head. It looked like he had spent way too much time in the bathtub for his head.
I have no idea.
He was a semi decent NBA player.
Kyle Singler? He was there forever.
No.
He was there forever.
No. He was.
Is he white or black? Come on. Wrinklehead.
He's black.
Is it Carlos Boozer?
No, but right around that same time.
Sheldon Williams?
Nope. The other one.
I am naming a lot of players.
I know you are. I'm going to look right now. I can't believe he has the wrinkled head. I mean, there's only one guy that has a wrinkle. It looked like a freaking prune.
I have no idea what you're referring to. I have not a clue.
Oh, my God. I'm going to find this, and you're gonna kick yourself as soon as I find out who the heck it was.
Like Tyler Hansbrough obviously played for UNC for like 27 years. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about. I really don't.
Oh, my God. I'm going to find it. I'll find it eventually.
Carlos Villanueva played for UConn, Mondo. It's Charlie.
No, Carlos Villanueva has no eyebrows.
It's Charlie Villanueva. Carlos is the baseball player.
Shane Battier.
Oh, Shane Battier. Yeah, it was a long time ago, Shane Battier. There wasn't the Boozer teams.
He has a wrinkled head.
I guess.
When he shaved his head, you could see like there was like rivets going across the head.
Doesn't Boozer have rivets also, though?
I don't think to that degree. No, Carlos Boozer had the like the perfect beard of like that magnet beard guy that you used to play with as a kid.
Yeah.
That's what Carlos Boozer had. Like it was also like painted on.
Sure. All right.
No. Yeah. Go back and look at some Shane Battier pictures when he shaved his head. He's prune head.
All right. A lot of Shane Battier. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back. More FST. Oh, FNTSY.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Well, if you are judging people based on how their face looks, I feel like you really like my theory of drafting players with cool names. Like, that was really one of the reasons I was super into Taiwan Walker for years. Like, I drafted Trevor Bauer because I like Jack Bauer.
Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a person
definitely.
On an all-cool team you'd have to go with. Maybe a little Luis Severino. Reese yeah. Hoskins, that's on the...
Oh, yeah, Reese Hoskins, 1,000%. Yeah.
Go Jack Swearinger totally for you?
Yeah, I can do that.
Oh,
that'll work.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like that one.
Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern, only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
So, as we get into March Madness here in a moment, FSD OT Code Next, Chris Venture, the analyst, joins us. You know the survivor pool I was in, Jake? So much less yeah. people than the one we're normally in. Full of buybacks, whatever. Last night, obviously, a crazy night of college basketball, which we're going to get into. Three people are left total.
I can't believe they're still left.
Three people are left total. Crazy.
Who'd they take?
One person last night took Loyola, and the other two people that are left wound up taking Michigan.
That makes more sense. I yeah. can definitely see Michigan. Michigan made the most sense last night. That was a lot of stones with the person with that one, Loyola.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I thought it was crazy. Now the whole strategy kind of changes. Like, you don't even need to necessarily make the finals. You need to survive right now. Like, we with so many people in the pool, you plan out so long and so far in advance. Now you just have to survive.
Yeah, that's the smart thing. I mean, there's only three left. I wouldn't even try to get cute. That's why I was saying, if I knew there's three left going into last night, there was no way that I would be taking Loyola.
Right,
as great as a feel-good story is this, I would just make sure I advance.
What you're doing is you're taking Loyola because you're setting yourself up for the Final Four. You're setting yourself up for the finals to have teams left and whatnot. And at this point, I don't even know if you have to do that because...
That's what I'm saying.
Right, because you just take Duke tonight over Syracuse, who I hope please loses. Actually, no, you know what? I don't even know who I'm ready for. I hate Duke. I hate Syracuse. I don't know. It's a bad game for me.
There's not a lot left to root for in general. I mean, you can just keep rooting for the upsets, but yeah, I'm tired of Syracuse, honestly. I'm just tired, but I hate Duke more than anything because I'm a UNC fan.
Sure, I hate Duke also as a Maryland fan, so go Syracuse tonight, I guess. But then the Syracuse people are happy, and it's like, do you get joy out of your friends being miserable when it comes to sports?
No.
I do.
I don't.
I do. Maybe a bad person.
And I have a friend who's a Cowboys fan and a Yankees fan, and I don't get a... Like, I'm not like, ha, 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 your team lost too.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I would never like text and be like, ha ha ha. But like deep down, I got to admit it, I'd be like so happy for them, like to be upset.
Actually, you know what? Maybe a little bit for the Yankees side of things.
Right. You hate the Yankees. Well, but that's interesting to me because you're a Mets fan. Like as a Giants fan, you would think you'd like when Corey's miserable about the Cowboys, I'm thrilled. It's great. But as a Mets fan, I'm Mets and Yankees aren't rivals.
No, I've always hated the Eagles more than the Cowboys.
That's fair. Yeah, same thing. When the Eagles winning the Super Bowl was like terrible. Like I felt terrible. If they would have lost dramatically, I would have felt awesome.
I can understand that. I definitely didn't want them to win. It's as much as everybody kept asking. It's like you can't root for the Patriots. It's like why? The Giants are 2-0 against them in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I have no problem with the Patriots. I don't care. Totally.
Yeah, as much the one thing you had over the Eagles is they had no rings.
Yeah, not anymore. Not anymore. Now that
the only division in all of football that has a rare team.
Really? There's not a single other one?
No, it's the only division in football that all four teams have rings.
Wow, the Bills could have won one of four Super Bowls. They would have been 1-2. But they did not. They did not.
Nope. Yeah. Bills are still out there.
Yeah, Bills are out there. By the way, Jake sent me a picture of Shane Battier's head with the wrinkles in it. I see what he's talking about now. So yes, I never called him wrinklehead, but all right, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and it was worse when his hair got really buzzed. His hair really close, almost like shaved. You could see how it was across his entire head.
God, seems dramatic.
Yeah, it's like his head was in permanently surprised space, but it's his head.
I wonder what Shane Battier is doing right now. I always thought he'd be an awesome coach. I know he worked for ESPN for a little while. I don't know if he's still there though. He joined the Heat front office. So. He's the director of basketball development and analytics. He's good. He's good. I like Shane Battier. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. OT is up next with Chris Ventura. We'll talk about Sister Jean. We'll talk about the NFL. And we'll get into March Madness preview for tonight. 2 hours down. One more to go. FST OT is up next.